is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Tim Hoyer from 180 Coaching, and you're listening to Hoopheads Podcast.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And we just watched an epic Milwaukee Bucks comeback to win game 4 of the NBA Finals.
You were going to call it epic, Mike? I don't know if I'm calling it epic.
It was a pretty good comeback.
Yeah, it was a good comeback, but the game was just, we talked before we started recording, the game was just bizarre. It was a bizarre game. Like, Phoenix had the chance to step on their throats at the beginning of the game. You agree with that statement? They had the chance to step on their throats, and they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. They got up 16-7, and then what was the final at the end of the? Let's see if I can find it.
It was tied at the end of the first half. It was 52-0.
So it was 16-7, and then the end of the quarter it was 23-20. And then
I'll say this: I agree with you 100% that Phoenix had the chance to step on Milwaukee's throat, but I'll counter that and say that Milwaukee had a chance to step on Phoenix's throat because I thought both teams offensively were horrible in the first half, and yet I couldn't believe. I turned to my son, who's with me here at Snow Valley in Iowa, as we were watching the game at a little restaurant eating some pizza, and I said to him, I'm like, I can't believe both these teams are going to score over 50 in the first half, because this is just, it was terrible offensive basketball, I thought, by both teams. I mean, neither team could shoot it, and both teams just look totally disjointed. I mean, really, other than Booker in the first half and maybe Middleton, who really got it going in the second half, nobody looked good on either team. So I agree with you that Phoenix could have stepped on their throat early, especially when they got off that big lead. But I thought the opportunity was there for Milwaukee, too.
Yeah, I see your point. I take your point, and I agree. And, you know, I will pat myself on the back for getting one thing right, was I said Booker was going to have a good game, and Booker played a really good game. And the thing that did him in was his foul trouble. And I don't really want to spend a lot of time on this. The refereeing tonight was somewhat suspect, in my opinion, in both directions, because, like, we could look at, like, that fifth foul that Booker got was a terrible call, but he should have had the sixth foul on that drive, which I don't know what the heck he was doing, trying to play defense there. Like, just let him score the layup.
I mean, he was trying to foul. I mean, he looked like he was trying to foul, and then maybe he forgot.
Mike Green did a great job. Fouled by Booker, but they didn't call it. That was a good call. It was a good call.
That was crazy. The call on PJ Tucker on the three on Crowder in the corner, where I don't know, maybe PJ Tucker brushed his arm and then Crowder falls down. Again, the official's not even in position to see whether or not there's contact there. It was like that call at the end of the game that you and I were talking about briefly before we came on, where Paul and Cam Johnson are trapping Middleton with 13 seconds to go. They're clearly not fouling him. They're not even reaching in at all. They're trying to get him to give it up to Giannis so they can go foul him. And the referee's like all the way, almost in the opposite corner.
Which, by the way, why the heck is Giannis not out of the game? Why doesn't Budenholzer substitute him out there?
No, you still want to have him in there to rebound and play defense. I mean, I know it's close to over, but you start going offense and defense, and then you get into the Ray Allen takes the shot after Tim Duncan's been subbed out and doesn't get that defensive rebound against the Heat back in whatever year that was, 2012, 2013. I mean, it's just, you live with the fact that maybe there's a chance he's going to get fouled, and Giannis is usually good for 1-for-2. I mean, he doesn't go 0-for-2 very often. Most of the time he's 1-for-2 or 2-for-2, I would say. So even as bad as a free throw shooter as he is, I just don't think you want him off the floor. I mean, he made some unbelievable defensive plays. The block on Ayton and the alley-oop when the score's tied, and
did you see him flex afterwards? I did not catch the flex. He blocked it, and then he looked at the stanchion that the basket stands at and yelled, flexed his muscles. It was easy to miss because the camera started to pan away, but I bet you there'll be a good picture for that.
He stared down Chris Paul too after the block that he had on Chris Paul at one point.
Yeah, Chris Paul was terrible tonight.
God, he was putrid.
He was almost as terrible as Drew Holiday was on the Drew Holiday.
Those guys were battling to see who could be the worst point guard on offense.
Drew Holiday was definitely the worst on offense. He hit 4-for-20. He was terrible. He missed 3-point blank shots again today.
Well, that one layup with about, I don't know when it was, maybe 3 minutes to go, where he got the rebound and kind of caught it in midair like it was an alley-oop, like you might see like a fifth grader try to catch in the air and then chuck it up towards the basket. I was like, what's he doing? Like, just grab the rebound and either go up strong or dribble it back out. And the only thing you can say with Holiday is that, I mean, the guy's defense is unbelievable. He just, anybody that he's guarding just either has to make an unbelievably difficult shot, which Booker did a few times on him. But for the most part, he just doesn't let guys get where they want to go. And I really think that the one piece that I have to give Budenholzer credit for is after game one, picking up Chris Paul full court or right at half court, I think it's wearing out Chris Paul. I mean, I really think that he's having to bump and grind and just to bring the ball up the floor. And I think it's having an effect on him. I don't think he's been obviously game one was his best game, but he hasn't been nearly as effective since then. And the turnovers in the last three games are completely uncharacteristic. And he turned it over tonight. The one Giannis poked away from him was a huge play. And I don't know. Chris Paul has not played well. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. He's not played well. But, like, listen, I truly feel like this was the game. I thought the Suns were going to win. I don't know how you felt, but like halfway through the third quarter, I was like, this feels like a Suns win. Like this feels like it. It's vibing like the Suns. Milwaukee was a mess on the offensive end of the floor. I have to say, Mike, I'm having flashbacks to like 2010 Cavs where everyone just stood and watched LeBron, and like they're just. The offense is terrible. I don't know what's going on. Like, it doesn't even look like, if I'm the Milwaukee, I'm putting the ball in Giannis's hands and I'm pushing the ball up the floor. Every time he's in the open floor and he attacks the basket, something happens. Good. Something good happens. I mean, 75-80% of the time. Like, setting up this half-court offense is just not, it's painful to watch, Mike. It's not good basketball. I don't know. It's not good in my opinion. I don't know how you feel, but
well, two things. So the first point that you made, I think, is one that I brought up last time after game three, that when Milwaukee gets stops and they can rebound or they get a turnover and they get out in transition, They really, I mean, I think they were the best team in transition over the course of the season, and they continue to be lethal in the full court situation because Giannis is oftentimes attacking. He had the two late in the fourth quarter where he drove and then for some reason passed. I think he was just nervous that he wasn't going to get the call and then ended up passing and not getting to the line, which may or may not have been a good thing. But yeah, Milwaukee's deadly in transition. So when they rebound or they turn a team over, they're going to get out, and that's when they're going to be really efficient on offense. So that's the first piece. And then the second piece of it is that there's way too many possessions for Milwaukee where Giannis never touches the ball. And that's not to say that he has to take every single shot or he has to be involved in every single finishing action, but how you run possessions where he doesn't at least get a touch doesn't make any sense to me. I just don't. It's not like the rest of their team is filled with playmakers and super creator guys that are going to be generating their own offense. It's like he has to be the guy that's bending the defense, getting people into screens and switches. And he had a couple really nice passes to Connaughton, who knocked in some big threes. I mean, Connaughton made a couple dumb plays too, but he made some really big shots at key moments. Although it looked like he was gonna be the GOAT when he turned that offensive rebound that they had into a turnover. But yeah, Giannis has to touch the ball and the Bucks get out in transition. If they do those two things, I mean, I think they can finish off this series. I mean, I think they can win. I think they'll win a game in Phoenix. But if they get away from having him touch the ball, things get real dicey real fast because they just don't. Who else do they have that can create anything?
Yeah. Okay, here you go. This Basketball Reference has got some good stats about our friend Drew Holiday. I hope you're ready for these ones. In the last 50 years, four players have had an NBA Finals game where they took 20-plus shots and shot 20% or worse, okay? Drew Holiday is one of them. Can you guess the other three?
Oh, I'm sure there's no way I can even begin to guess.
They're all people that have played in the last 20 years.
All in the last 20 years. So that means it's since the year 2000.
Yeah.
Under 20% in a finals game. Man, I don't even know where to begin.
Oh, come on. Come on. Think really hard. Think really hard about someone who's always out of control.
Someone who's always out of control. I don't know. I have nothing. My brain is fried right now.
Russell Westbrook, 2012.
Okay. Okay.
Kenyon Martin in 2003.
Okay.
And Kobe in 2000.
All right. I mean, again, I would have had no idea even trying to remotely guess that. But yeah, Holiday offensively was clueless. I mean, last game he goes 5 for 10 from 3, and tonight he's 0 for 5. Look at the three-point shooting in tonight's game from both teams. So the Bucks go 7 for 29, and Phoenix goes 7 for 23. I mean, Booker, yep, who was 17 for 28 from the field, he himself was 0 for 3 from 3. Crowder takes 9 threes. I guess he makes 3. Crowder's been the best three-point shooter in this series.
Yep. Okay. And here's another good one, Mike.
Okay.
Chris Middleton, he had, I don't know how many shot attempts did he end up having?
33.
In the last 50 years, only five other players have had 33 shot attempts in a game, in an NBA Finals game. Can you let these ones you might be able to figure out in the last 50 years?
In the last 50 years?
Yes. They're all guys that have played since the 90s.
LeBron.
Kobe.
Jordan. How many more do I need?
Two more.
Shaq.
Nope.
No. Okay.
Someone that played with one of these players.
Someone that played with one of the people that I already mentioned?
Yep.
Kyrie?
No.
So somebody that played with Jordan?
Yep.
Pippen?
Yeah, Pippen had a game of 33.
Wow. Okay, and I need one more?
Yeah, he famous for something that happened with a former Cavaliers head coach.
Famous for something that happened with a former Cavaliers head coach.
In the finals.
I don't know.
Something to do with a step over.
Oh, Allen Iverson.
Yep, there you go.
All right. Yeah, well, Iverson was only in one final, so how many shots did Iverson get up?
I don't know. It's just
over 33.
33 and plus. Yeah, I don't have those in front of me. It was just past where I was.
I mean, it's funny because we think about Middleton tonight, and he gets 40, but he does take 33 shots. He shoots less than 50% from the field. He only goes 15 for 33. He's 3 for 8 from three.
Probably. I don't have the efficiency stats, but I wouldn't assume that he was very efficient tonight, right?
I mean, he was plus 10, so he had the highest plus. Well, no, sorry, Pat Connaughton plus 21.
Yeah. If they lost the game tonight, if Milwaukee lost the game, I was going to blame Pat Connaughton in that three-pointer where it bounced over the backboard and landed on the shot clock. He was wide open, and he missed that shot.
Connaughton seems to make maybe difficult shots and seems to miss some of the easy ones that you think that he should put in. But he was good tonight. I thought he had 9 rebounds. I thought he did a lot of good things. I mean, he still makes some dumb plays that you're like, what's he doing? But he is super important. I mean, without him, their depth is not too good as it is, but without Connaughton, yeah, they'd be really in trouble. The thing that I think it was interesting about this game is, you know, you mentioned that middle of the third quarter that you thought Phoenix was gonna kind of walk away with it. And I really felt like I felt it the same way. As I'm watching that game, it felt like even though both teams were struggling to score, it felt like Phoenix was able to generate better shots for themselves through the first 3.5 quarters, maybe even through the first 3 quarters, maybe even the fourth, it started to turn a little bit. And then all of a sudden, it felt like Phoenix was having to work really, really hard to get baskets, and that Milwaukee's shots were starting to come a little bit easier, and they were getting better shots. And I think, I mean, maybe you just don't want to – maybe you're trying not to wear down Giannis and Middleton, but I know Van Gundy kept talking about it, and Mark Jackson, that, look, just get those two guys playing a two-man game, and then you can get things off of that. And I just felt like the game flipped there midway through the fourth quarter, where it went from Phoenix being able to generate decent looks to Milwaukee suddenly looking like every time down they could get a good shot. Now, that didn't mean they made them all, but it felt like it flipped, that one team went from being able to get an easy shot in Phoenix, and then suddenly Milwaukee was the team that was able to score a little bit easier. And again, they outscored them 33-21 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, I give it up to Milwaukee. I think this is going 7 games now, Mike. I'm going to stick with the Suns, but I'm going to say it's going to go 7. I think the game, what's the old phrase, Mike? The series doesn't start until
the home team loses, or until the road team wins.
Road team wins one on the, and Milwaukee could very well go and beat the Suns at home. We have to wait until when? We have to wait till Sunday.
Saturday.
So we got to wait till Saturday for that game. I'm gonna say the Suns are gonna win. I think we're going 7, Mike, and I'm saying the Suns are gonna win Game 5. Milwaukee's gonna win Game 6, and then the Suns will win Game 7. Because I just don't think that Phoenix is gonna lose 4 games in a row. I think they're gonna win one, and then we're gonna get to a Game 7 situation, and then it's gonna be just who wins it in 7. That's my prediction.
I mean, that's fair. If you're Phoenix, you better get a better Chris Paul. If you don't get a better Chris Paul than what you got tonight, and if his performances, I mean, he's gone every game he's gotten worse. And if he continues to trend in that direction, I don't think there's any way Phoenix can win this if he doesn't play better. I mean, he's got to get to a level where, I mean, he's at worst, he has to be their second best player. And tonight he was nowhere near that. I thought he just didn't do the things that he normally does, and had some key turnovers. He had got that shot blocked by Giannis. That was a key moment in the game in the fourth quarter. And he's got to be better. But I do think that Milwaukee's strategy of picking him up full court and bumping him and making him work and being physical with him, it's starting to take his toll. And it felt like in his games 1 and 2 that when he got isolated onto Portis, or even when he got isolated onto Giannis, that he was kind of able to shake his way and cross over his way into a good mid-range shot or bang home a three. And the last couple games in Milwaukee, it feels like even when he gets those switches and gets those shots, it just feels like he's coming up short on a lot of them and he's not knocking them in. And then the turnovers have been so uncharacteristic for the way he's played all season. And in some moments where you don't expect him to turn the ball over, you expect him to be the guy that you can put the ball in his hands and have him make good decisions. And that just hasn't been the case. And I texted you in the middle of the game, when I'm looking at these two teams, I just don't know. It's the same thing we said about teams all year. Like, I just don't know who to trust. I don't know from game to game who's going to show up. So Mikal Bridges has, 27 in game two? And since then, I think he's scored 11 points in two games. Crowder the other day goes 6 for 7 from three. And he was decent today, but he only shoots 3 for 9. Booker was non-existent last game. Tonight he goes for 42. I don't know. I don't know if I'm Phoenix. Who do I trust to come in and play well beyond my best guys? And even them, I'm not sure who's showing up for Milwaukee. Middleton had his big Middleton game. He had his 40. Does he have another one or two of those games left in him in the final three games? I don't know. Holiday is going to show up? I mean, I think his defense is going to be there, but I have no idea what offensive Jrue Holiday is going to show up. I think Giannis is going to show up, but he probably has to take, I mean, he's probably not going to be able to score 26 in another game and have them win unless you get a huge Middleton game. Are we going to get a game where Middleton and Holiday play well together? It doesn't seem like that's even remotely possible. I mean, if that were ever to happen, the Bucks might win by 40.
All right, got another basketball reference. Just tweeted this one out. The Bucks shot 40% from the field, 24% from the 3-1. The last team to do that and win an NBA Finals game were the Cleveland Cavaliers in game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals.
That they shot, what was the stat?
40% from the field and 24% from behind the arc.
Okay.
That's a good fat. I saw the Cavs, so good stat on that.
Yeah, well, Milwaukee shot really well from the line, too. Giannis goes 4 for 8, but the only other guy to miss a free throw is Middleton. And so they were 24 for 29.
And they took a lot of free throws. So
yeah, you know. I mean that's a good performance from Milwaukee, because usually Giannis's attempts and misses drags him down. Yeah. I thought Giannis wasn't quite as spectacular offensively as he's been the last two games, but defensively it just felt like he was everywhere, getting in passing lanes, blocking shots, poking the ball away from people, and offensively he did just enough. I thought he had some really nice passes where he drew defenders and then kicked it out. He had 8 assists tonight. I thought his playmaking was really important, especially in that comeback where he was finding, whether it was Connaughton for threes or he found Middleton a couple times. He's really, I mean, we talked about it last game. He's taken it to a whole nother level of where I think people thought that he could get to. I don't know if anybody really believed that he had this kind of performance in him over the course of an NBA Finals. I guess I trust him more than anybody else in this series, which is why I keep leaning towards Milwaukee at this point, even though I don't know anybody else on their roster who next game I'm sure that they're going to show up with their A game. I mean, there's nobody on that roster that I look at and say, yeah, I know for sure that Jrue Holiday's offense is going to be there. Or I know for sure Middleton's going to knock down 4 threes. Or I know Brook Lopez is going to be great. There just isn't anybody. I mean, PJ Tucker played 29 minutes and didn't score. What do you do with that if you're Mike Budenholzer? I mean, he has to keep playing him, obviously, because his defense is needed and there just isn't anybody else. How many minutes can you play, have Jeff Teague out there? Not many is the answer. And It's just I'm just thankful that.
Hey, he was 2 for 2 from the line.
Look, Teague wasn't. I mean, he wasn't horrible. He was fine. He didn't kill him tonight. I'm just glad Bud has decided in this postseason that Giannis has to play more than 34 minutes a game in order for them to win. Maybe the lack of depth was the best thing. Maybe the injury to DiVincenzo and just the fact that he can't trust anybody else on the bench. Bryn Forbes got a DNP tonight, didn't see the floor. The fact that you're only playing 8 guys and ideally you'd probably only like to play 7 just means that Giannis and Middleton and Holiday have to be out there for 42, 43, 44, 45 minutes in order for them to win. And maybe Bud's hand being forced is something that Bucks fans should be thankful for, that maybe the lack of depth has taken the ability of Bud to sit those guys for extra minutes to get them extra rest. It's taken that decision out of his hands and just said, look, you got to play these guys. And they've been good. They've been good these 2 games in Milwaukee, and the series looks a lot different now than it did after game 2. Will it all flip again when we go back to Phoenix? It certainly is 100% possible, because as I've said over and over again, I don't know who I trust on any of these teams to show up. And just like I didn't trust the teams, now I just don't trust any of the players. And the guy I trust is Giannis, and so that's why I keep leaning Bucks, because I just think that he's going to come up and play. He's proven himself. He's going to play well. And
so do you think is it going to be Bucks? Are you saying Bucks in 6?
I think. I was Bucks in 7, but I started Bucks in 6, and then I flipped to Bucks in 7. I think I'm flipping back to Bucks in 6 because I think Phoenix is a little rattled. I think they're a little bit rattled. I think when they go back and they think about this game, like you said, they had an opportunity at the beginning to kind of salt it away. And I think when you look at that fourth quarter getting outscored 33-21, and the fact that they were up 9 at one point in the fourth and seemingly had the game under control and then let that thing slip away with some plays that uncharacteristic turnovers from Chris Paul, maybe some great defensive plays from Giannis. But I just think that they're going to look at that and say, man, that was a missed opportunity. And how do you deal with, I still think Giannis is just unguardable. I just don't think they have an answer for him. And if I'm Milwaukee and we go to Phoenix, I'm going to do the things that I talked about earlier, which is I'm going to continue to try to get turnovers and get defensive stops, which allows me to get out in transition. And then anytime I have a half-court possession, Giannis just has to touch the ball, because anytime he touches the ball, typically good things have been happening for Milwaukee. It's the possessions where he doesn't get it, where they end up getting some crazy Jrue Holiday shot, or they end up dribbling around and not getting the kind of opportunity that they need. He just has to touch the ball in every possession, in my opinion.
Yep. Completely fair. All right, I don't have much else to say. Like I said, I think the Suns are winning game 5, Mike. I also said the Suns are going to win game 4, so please don't take my advice and bet on based on what I say. But I think they're going to...
All right, let's do this. I asked you this question last game. Let me ask you the question for this game. Who, you said Booker was the guy, right? You told me Booker was going to be the guy in this game. So kudos to you. Comes up with 42. So that was a pretty good prediction. I think I said Middleton. So I did pretty well. So let's pick our game. Let's pick our guy for the next game. Who's going to be the guy for Phoenix in your mind in the next game? Who comes up big?
Can I pick Booker again?
Sure.
I'm going to take Booker again.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go Holiday. I'm going Jrue Holiday.
Oh God.
Big game.
I can't wait to the first. Well, I don't know. You probably won't watch the first. You might not get to watch much of the first half, or like depending on what you guys got going on in Snow Valley. But I can't wait to the first 5 minutes of the game when I text you, Jrue Holiday can't dribble the ball.
Hey, he doesn't have to dribble. He just has to make a couple threes. So, hey, let's put it this way. He might shoot better. He's going to shoot better than 4 for 20. I'll bet you that.
Yep. All right.
And Giannis is going to have to get 35 or 40 in order for them to win game 5, which obviously he's capable of doing. So I expect Milwaukee's going to win. I think it's another close game. I'm going to go 114-106 Milwaukee by 8. 114-106.
I'm gonna go Phoenix 112 Milwaukee, 103. I'm going to say a 9-point win for the Phoenix Suns.
All right. We will see. We will see what happens. It's been... I'm glad this was a close game. It was nice to see a game that's close. I think this series is super evenly matched. And any result that happens from this point on, just like we said after the last game, there won't be any result that really surprises me. I could see either one of these teams winning the next two. Although I think it's less likely to me that Phoenix wins Game 5 and Game 6. I could see more Milwaukee wins Game 5 and Game 6. I think if Phoenix wins it, it's going to go 7. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. So thank you for... Is there anything else before we wrap up and say goodnight?
No. I apologize if the editing isn't as good as Mike normally does, because I'm going to be doing it tonight. So
you're going to rock it out, man. It'll all be good.
Yeah, just send all hate mail to...
you can send Jason it to me, Mike at Hoopheads.
Jason at Hoopheads Pod. I don't even use that email, so just send it there, jason@hoopheadspod.com. That would be a good place to send the email. So
there you go. That sounds like a plan. Just hit us on Twitter.
Yeah. All right, Mike. We will talk soon. We will talk, and then we have an episode going up Friday. What episode going up Friday?
On Friday, we have the roundtable coming up. Absolutely. So our roundtable episode this month is, our question was, what's the biggest challenge you faced in your coaching career and how did you overcome it? So we got some great answers. Some great coaches are involved in that episode. So you can look forward to catching that one on Friday. And then we will be back late Saturday night / early Sunday morning with the Game 5 wrap-up pod, which should be a very interesting and obviously very, very important game. So thanks for checking us out tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.